Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome back to another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. David here with the Mountain and the Jaime Lannister to my Queen Cersei, the greatest character in the history of Game of Thrones. Randy and Justin, how the hell are you guys doing? Randy first.
I'm fantastic, and I'm going to be the one that has both his hands.
Ooh, I like it. Ooh. So that means you're the zombie, or that means you're the one-handed guy, but Randy's a zombie. So, Justin, how do you feel about that?
I'm okay. I can do a lot with one hand.
You know, I listen to this other show on the Geek Legacy Network called the Pixelated Podcast, and when Steven says, Justin, how you doing? They're like, I'm fabulous!
It's all lies.
You're like, whatever, David. I don't have to pretend to like you anymore. Fuck you.
I'm the sad clown. It's all lies.
Are you downtrodden because of Game of Thrones? When you're downtrodden, you should be pumped.
Oh, no, I'm super excited. I'm sorry. I just have a headache. I don't know what my problem is. It's my head hurts. I don't like
it. That's the same thing my wife says, and I know it's useful if it do. So, do we need to go to counseling?
Not enough caffeine. I was on the road all day, went on a little road trip for the weekend, and I'm tired of everything right now.
I saw you're out paddling a canoe in a lake somewhere.
Yeah, it was a rowboat.
And, that's a lot of work.
It was. In fact, I feel like I rowed across the entire lake, but I only went about 50 yards because it was against the current and it was windy, and it was so hard. I'm not going to lie.
You got to do what we did a couple of weeks ago. We went white water rafting, and the water does most of the work for you.
Yeah.
You mostly just steer in.
Well, the problem was the property line was where I needed to get back to, and I was just drifting so far away that I was just working so hard to get back to where I needed to be, and it was rough, but it was cool. We went to a place called Lake Crescent. It's formerly a glacier, and it's super cold water. Jumped into it first thing in the morning yesterday and got a little shock to my system, but had a fantastic weekend.
Nice.
Just
nice.
A long drive home.
Now, when you jumped into the water and got out, did you feel like an electric buzz go through your body?
Sort of. That could probably describe. I couldn't even speak at first when I jumped in and I resurfaced. I probably screamed as loud as I could underwater, and then when I came to the top, I wanted to say it's cold, but came out.
What do they call that? Are you a member of the polar bear? Yeah, polar bear club or something like that. Now.
Polar bear plunge. That's in Alaska, but yeah. No, that's a little too cold for me.
Yeah, we did something like the polar bear plunge on like New Year's, and I remember getting into the freezing water, and as soon as I got out and like I wasn't freezing, like my whole body just felt like it was like electrified. Like yeah. I would like had this like buzz, like it was like I drinking like 10 cups of coffee or something like that.
I believe it.
It's a pretty good feeling.
It's better than the wine they're serving at the Twins, I tell you that much.
Oh my God. Justin, you wrote it. You got a nice little list here, Justin. So why don't you lead us through the Game of Thrones episode that was kind of just a recap of, hey, remember this character from last season? He's still here.
Right. Yeah, I took it upon myself just to sort of write down whatever little scene was as it was going, just so I could remember as we talked about it. But yes, the intro. So finally, first of all, Game of Thrones is back after a little wait. Typically, we get to watch this show in, what, April?
April.
Excuse me, I had to wait till July, but that's okay. We're here and we're ready, so go do it. Season 7 opens pretty strong with what seems to be walking, talking Walder Frey, and he's got all of his top little, what do you call them, warriors in one little room, and he's toasting to them and saying,
do you
hey,
think we need to throw a spoiler warning out? Do you think people are smart enough to realize that we're going to spoil the shit out of the show right now?
No, are they?
I don't want anyone to cry. They cry.
I'll put it in the description.
All right. This is your audio spoiler warning. Sorry, Justin. Yeah. I just don't want anyone to give you any hate.
No, it's all good. Spoilers. We're going to ruin the show. Yeah, interestingly enough, barely anything happened in this episode. It was still a good episode, but nothing really mind-blowingly exciting happened. So even if you were to hop onto social media right now, you wouldn't be spoiled for the end of days. It's not the end of the world, but
no,
either way, You got all the Freys, all the important ones anyway. And Walder Frey's up there, and he's talking, you know, he gets him some wine. Everybody's got a glass in front of him, and he's like, yeah, let's toast to killing the Starks and, you know, slitting their throats and killing pregnant women and doing everything that you do great. And then they start to choke and start choking on their own blood and spitting and spewing. And wouldn't you know it, they drop dead right in front of Walder. And the entire time, you know that something's weird. Most of us probably figured out that it was Arya Stark in the first, like, 8 seconds of the scene. But it was still pretty cool to see the events play out. And when she took off the mask and revealed herself and says to the nice little, whatever we want to call her, sister wife, daughter wife, I don't know.
I like sister wife. Daughter wife's better.
She says, you know, when they ask about this, you tell them the North remembers that winter has come for House Frey. And that was pretty chilling. And then, you know, we got our cold open. That was great. What about you guys? You happy? You like that? It's a good way to kickstart the season?
Like, yeah, I'm not really an Arya guy. Like, I'm the lone wolf here who doesn't love Arya, but, like, I love this a lot. Like, she's finally back making do, and we'll talk about her scene later on where she just kind of, like, walks into a camp of Lannisters without fear, with, like, yeah, whatever, I can probably kill you. Like, the camera shows us that she's looking like, oh, their weapons are over here, and this is over here, so you know that if anything went sideways, she'd probably be okay, but I really am interested in what she's doing now, especially since everyone else is kind of working to, like, unify against other people. You know, it's all about, you know, one group coming together with another group to fight a different group, and that other group's forming with other groups, like Voltron, to come together. And she's just like this, like, chick, the girl on her own.
Lone wolf.
Yeah, just going about her business, killing people on her list. And
you mentioned before the show that David Bradley, who most of us know as Filch from Harry Potter. He's, of course, Walder Frey, and it was great to see him come back for this role and play a creepy sort of off-putting version of himself, character of himself, and that was pretty great. Randy, what were your thoughts?
Oh, I loved every second of that. Put me at the top of the Arya Stark fan club, and I've been fascinated with her adventures in previous seasons, and I thought this was the absolute best way to open this season. So, yeah, and I know we'll get to that camp scene later on, so I'm anxious to talk to you guys about that. But I thought the opening of it was fantastic.
Now, you mentioned you're a big fan of Arya. Did you like the stuff in Braavos? Like, I think that's what really turned me off to Arya. Like, I dug the fact that she had a rivalry with Sansa, and since I just loathe Sansa to the depths of my soul, you know, I had to like Arya just because she also hated Sansa. But yeah, all the stuff in Braavos was just, maybe it was because it was so disconnected from the rest of the plot, but like last like 3 seasons, I've just been snooze fest on her.
Like when she went blind and when she was fighting against that other girl that had it out for her, that kind of thing. I mean, it wasn't my favorite stuff of hers. But I thought it was cool. Like when she's traveling, like a couple seasons before that, when she's traveling around with the Hound, I dig that, you know, all of that was really fun. Yeah, the Bravo stuff, granted, wasn't the best, but, you know, it's a means to an end. It's a vehicle that's getting us to where we are now. It needed to happen.
All right, so moving on. We get the credits that seem like they're longer now than they've ever been. And then cut to the snow, where winter is obviously here. We're beyond the wall, and sort of a dark figure looming in the white out there, and it looks like it is the Night King.
Yeah, the Night King.
Yeah, front and center, like leading the pack. And it sort of shows the countless White Walkers, including zombie giants, which was scary, to say the least.
Yeah, it's not like it's so good for those south of the wall folk. And I don't know how, obviously, there's been a lot of talk about the wall, this one episode, and the importance of the wall, and the wall's never fallen. Nothing will ever happen to the wall, so we know something's going to happen to the wall, and it's just a matter of, you know, in the books, there's this thing called, like, the horn of insert 12 consonants, and supposedly Mance Rayder had it, and it was able to destroy the wall, but we haven't seen it, and so I don't know if that's going to be it, but I didn't know what you guys thought about. You know, we know there are magical protections at the wall to where no White Walker can go through it, But once we saw that happen before with Bran, when he was with the Three-Eyed Raven in that tree, you know, when the White Walker, when the Night's King touched him, he was able to penetrate those defenses. Do you think now that Bran has gone through the wall, like, he's like, they're able to penetrate those? Or do you think if that was the case, we would have gotten some form of, like, tell, like a story, like a visual cue? How do you think the wall's coming down, Justin?
I don't know if it is. I think they're bringing all the attention to that castle on the coast.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe there's a workaround.
Like a back door?
Mm-hmm.
Go around the wall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, go
gotta,
over when you can go around.
Gotta end somewhere.
Yeah.
That would be the best, just fuck you to everybody. Like, we just went around.
Yeah.
No, well, sorry. White Walkers, they're scary.
I mean, honestly, let's explore that silly thought for just a second, though. I mean, what's to stop them from kind of going out to the coast, kind of freezing some water, walking around on this now frozen bridge, coming around, and there you go.
Yep.
Death threats to Mr. GRRM.
And they're like, edit. As they walk by.
It's just the Night King give him the bird. Just like, what the fuck do you think?
Pretty much.
Like, they're at the wall, and, like, the whole army is, like, on the wall, like, looking down, like, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? And, like, he just, like, smiles, and they just, like, moonwalk around, like, what?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many of them that they could even make a bridge using themselves, pretty much, like army ants or something.
Like World War Z style?
Yeah. That would work, too. They're not moving terribly fast. They're taking their time, which is nice.
Yeah, I know we talked about it in the past, but having seen now that we're one episode into this 7-episode season, and you know we talked, there's only 12 episodes remaining in this whole show. Do you think we get the White Walker fight this season, or do you think we get like a skirmish, kind of like Hardhome, like last season or 2 seasons ago, and then they save the big war for season 7? Which way do you think that's going to fall, Randy? Big war against big battle, or just like just like a skirmish, like Hardhome style.
I don't know, man. Because it almost seems like we need it seems like we need a little bit of time to digest whatever's going to happen first. You know, it's like they need to fight amongst themselves to kind of figure out who is going to be on the Iron Throne, and then only after, you know, some sort of big battle there, it seems like then they would realize, okay, well, whoever isn't dead, look, we've got this other bigger problem we need to face, and that's season 8, is the fight against the White Walkers. But I really don't know.
Like a Return of the King style thing where we won at
battle of Osgiliath. Yeah.
Yeah. But the battle of the war for Middle Earth has just begun.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Because the rest of the world needs to understand this threat. As of right now, it's just the people in the North that give a damn.
Yeah, I mean, and if there was one good thing that can come out of Gilly and the Fat plot threads, it's that we now know that, like, almost all the Maesters thinks that Sam and everyone else is full of shit, that there's no such thing as White Walkers.
Right.
And so if they don't, and they're the ones teaching the nobles and everybody else, obviously the general consensus in the world is, like, these aren't real.
Yep. All ruse.
Yeah, there's, like, 30 people alive who have seen them.
So moving on. Bran, this kid, he's back at what I believe is Castle Black, knocking on the door there. And he's getting closer proximity to Mr. Jon Snow. And I was led to believe in the trailers that we saw that Jon does make it back to the northern side of the North, if that makes sense. like, at least he's back near Castle Black. So I can't imagine it taking too long for a raven to get word to Winterfell that his brother has indeed returned.
Yeah. I thought they kind of accepted who he was pretty quick. Like, are you a wildling? And then he, like, told him, like read their minds. To me, that would, like, reek of something that, like, a wildling witch would do. And you know, maybe don't trust this kid.
Right.
It's like, kill the cripple or something like that, you know?
Reminds me
Pip
of
just puts his axe.
In Scream when Courtney Cox calls David Arquette and she's like, Dewey, it's me. He's like, how do I know that? She's like, She's like, what do you mean? It's me. He's like, well, don't you think that's something the killer would say? It's pretty great. Yeah. It's sort of a, clearly I can't drink the glass in front of me sort of situation. Moving on. John starts to make some valid points when he's addressing the hall there at Winterfell. Sansa is all about taking away the homes from the Umbers and the Karstarks, saying, fuck those guys, they betrayed us. And he is more to the point of, I'm not going to punish families for something that their fathers or their sons have done. That's not the right thing to do. I believe that he makes the right call there. And sure enough, I mean, doesn't it make more sense to have two allies versus two enemies? I mean, it seems pretty cut and dry to me, but perhaps you guys would argue differently.
Even if they their kingdoms are run by kids.
Yeah, well, now's the time to start afresh, like a reboot.
Right.
In most cases, those families follow tradition, so if they're the little lord of the house, then they will do what they're told. And I think that Madame Mormont is a perfect example of that. She's a child, but she is braver than most of the people in that room.
I agree.
And more opinionated.
Yeah. I mean, I'm you guys know me. I'm heavily on the fuck Sansa. She's terrible. I wish something terrible happens to Sansa, and I hope something does terrible happen to her. But she actually does have, like, one small good point when she's talking to Jon later, where she is talking about, you know, this is what happened to Dad. This is what happened to Rob, you know. They were all honor and duty and this and that, and they both fucking got killed. And so the Jon, if he's going to stay King of the North, which I don't think he will for very long, I think as soon as him and Daenerys hook up, they're going to be on their own little adventures, and they'll leave Sansa to run Winterfell. But in the interim, if he's going to lead, he needs to be smarter and play the game a little bit better than his brother and his dad did, or his adopted father did.
Right. Which I think he'll do. I think her advice sort of rung a bell with him.
Yeah. And it was cute when, like, she's still like, oh, that's how Joffrey acted. He's like, you compare me to Joffrey? He's like, you're like the least Joffrey type person I've ever met, or something like that. So that was kind of sweet. But
yeah, it goes a long way.
It was good they had that scene just to show that Sansa does not harbor any ill will towards Jon. It's simply the fact that she's had a starkly, no pun intended, different experience than Jon, you know, being with Cersei for like 5 years and being with Joffrey and all that, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's not a fan.
Should be a fan of Cersei, because Cersei's the best.
And that's another point she brings up, too, is that there's a wall separating them from their enemy in the north, and there's nothing separating their enemy to the south, short of 1,000 miles.
Yeah, of snow.
Of snow.
Jon Snow.
Yeah, there's a lot of Jon around here. We need chains for our wagons.
Yeah.
Then next shot, we have the sea that's right there by King's Landing. And it's a bunch of Greyjoy ships, which...
I think you skipped the scene. You skipped the Jaime Cersei scene, where they're on top of that giant map.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
And you get the strong, I'm going to kill you vibe from Jaime.
Yes. I'm sorry, apologies. So Cersei and Jaime have a really interesting scene where she is sort of identifying all of their enemies. And he's saying, we are in trouble. But she doesn't want to hear any of it. She's like, eat a dick. And I don't know, what did you think of that scene?
I mean, I'm a Lannister guy. I really like Cersei. she's terrible. I don't think she's redeemable in the least, but she's that cunning, like, two moves ahead. Like, so she's now, we're starting to see this schism between the two of them to where, you know, for the first five and a half seasons, they were kind of always on the same page, and they always had the same goals, and they were always trying to protect their babies and X, Y, and Z. To where now Cersei is, there's nothing anchoring Cersei to reality. You know, she doesn't have, before she had to play nice and play the game because she didn't want anything bad to happen to her kids. Bad shit happened to her kids. And she's even calling Tommen a traitor. But so now we're getting her completely unhinged, and Jamie, for like the first time in his life since he's met Brienne, he's kind of become the more grounded character, like, you know, maybe we're the bad guys type situation. And I think that schism is only going to go greater as the next 12 episodes come, and there's going to come a point to where it's going to come to a head. And I hope with all hope that all this stuff with the Hound, with Sandor Clegane, is just leading us to the Clegane Bowl that everyone wants. It's Mountain versus Hound. And once the Mountain's done, you know, that clear shot to Cersei right there. And anyone kills Cersei, I want it to be Jaime or Tyrion.
Yeah, I think it'll be Jaime for sure. I think that he understands what the city means, and he's already killed a king once for someone that wanted to burn it to the ground than rather have somebody else sit on his throne. And I think that that's just going to be one of those history repeating itself type of moments.
Yeah.
They don't call him the Kingslayer for nothing.
Right.
That's right. But I think it's important to realize that when Jaime did kill Aerys the Mad King, that he had the throne was his, you know, like he had killed the king. He had disposed of the king. All he needed to do was sit on the throne and lay claim to the Seven Kingdoms. And he could have been the king, but he had a sense of honor. He realizes that even though he betrayed his king, that as a Kingsguard, he gave up all rights to title and land. And so that's why he stepped aside when Robert and Ned entered the throne room and then Robert took the throne. So, you know, Jaime's a deep, deep character.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yay, Lannister.
Yeah. Not so much with the Greyjoys. Hate those sons of bitches. And wouldn't you know it, they can build a ship faster than anybody else in the whole world.
A thousand of them.
Their whole fleet was taken from them. They had a couple of rocks and sticks and turned it into a whole armada. Just add water, I guess. And Euron Greyjoy took counsel with the lovely Cersei. And he, like you said, is a bit of a rock star. He has this little attitude that goes with him, and love him or hate him, I think that Euron is here to stay, at least for a while. And what'd you think of his proposition that he's like, hey, you can have all my ships. I just want to marry you. You think he's full of shit?
Oh, no. I think well, last season he was talking about giving Daenerys his cock, mm-hmm. So he seems like a pretty stand up guy. Yeah,
he's shooting for a star, Dave.
I definitely dug all the jabs at Jaime talking about like how he has two hands, and then like when he was talking about killing his brother the king, he's like, oh my god, killing your brother is like the best thing. It feels so good. You should try it.
Yeah, that was great.
So yeah, I'm like you. I'm like, I hate the Greyjoys, and now they introduced this cool one. I'm probably gonna have to, I mean, he's gonna be the bad guy. He's gonna be the Roose Bolton / Joffrey of the season, I think. But he's pretty cool so far.
So, what kind of gift do you think he's gonna go try to procure for Cersei?
Well, what do you? I think Justin's got an idea.
I was under the impression it was gonna be Tyrion as sort of the ultimate gift.
That is kind of what I was. Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well.
Yeah, I think that's probably the safe bet. What I'm trying to think, what kind of outside the box? I mean, aside from a dragon, which I don't see him being able to capture. But
well, I mean, the only reason why I would think it was Tyrion was because they make a point of saying that he was able to infiltrate Casterly Rock and burn all of their ships. So he's definitely a sneaky, sneak rogue type of character. And that tells me that he's under the impression that he could sneak into Dragonstone, kidnap Tyrion, and be out and back at King's Landing before anybody knew he was gone.
Yeah. And in the novels, he has a horn called Dragonbinder that supposedly Valyrians used to use when dragons were plentiful. And any dragon that hears the horn of Dragonbinder is instantly drawn to that person as their new master. And but the downfall to that is that whoever blows the horn of the Dragonbinder horn, or horn of Dragonbinder, I don't know, it's one of those two, whoever blows that horn is killed as well. So you have to be kind of an immortal person. And in the novels, Euron is kind of like supposedly someone who's like mastered the ability to like come back from the dead and stuff like that. So I don't know if they're going to bring any of this supernatural mumbo jumbo into the series, but you know, it would be interesting if all of a sudden Euron just fucking flies into old Red Keep with a dragon for Cersei and be like, "Hey, what do you think now?" This is a crazy outside the box theory. I think it'll be Tyrion. I'm just trying to think of something else that it could be.
Like a rock.
Ooh, a rock. Like The Rock?
Yeah.
From Ballers?
Yeah.
It's like a crossover with Ballers?
Can you imagine?
No, that show's terrible. It's got The Rock and it's still terrible.
Or maybe one of her kids in sort of a Weekend at Bernie's situation.
It's like, "Hey Mom, I think you should trust this Euron guy. He seems pretty cool." Yeah.
That'd be great. They're just playing board games under an umbrella.
Got the little rope attached to her hand so she can wave.
Yikes.
We're terrible. Terrible. We're the worst.
Yeah, speaking of the worst, what do you think of Gilly? Gilly and the Fat.
Wow.
Gilly and the Fat. Of course we mean Gilly and Sam Tarly. Is that his name? Samuel yes. Tarly. Ugh. What did you think of that fun little scene where it's like a minute long of him just going through a montage?
Just a montage of shit.
Food and potty.
Stew.
And
the worst.
Yes.
Ugh. I hated He's it. The worst.
He is the worst. So he made it finally to, I guess, the Citadel, the Maester College, starting at the bottom of the barrel, working hard for the money, and trying to get access to the Forbidden Section. And Professor Slughorn makes an appearance.
He's the... Yeah, okay. I was trying to figure out who that guy was. I'm like, why do I know him?
Doing an autopsy on Aemon Targaryen. Just kind of
Oh,
sad.
Is that who they're doing it on?
I believe so.
Oh, I just thought it was some random maester guy.
No, I think he says something about it when he first starts cutting open to him.
Oh.
It looks like him, too. But all those old white guys look alike.
Yeah. Honkies.
Fuckers. But yeah, I am not interested in Sam or Gilly in the least bit. But, of course, we got to get a dosage of them. And then immediately cut to...
Do we?
I think so. Because he had to have the epiphany of Dragonstone and Dragonglass.
There's no other way they could do it other than this long, protracted character that takes screen time away from people we care about. Like, they couldn't just...
But he's
someone couldn't
be,
just stumble across it?
He was charged with... the task of finding a way to defeat the White Walkers. He is going to be the link between Daenerys and Jon Snow.
So, and then one of Daenerys' dragons lead him?
Yeah, maybe. If we're so lucky.
He's so insufferable.
And then it cuts to Tormund Giantsbane getting his rocks off with Brienne beating the shit out of Pod.
You're a lucky guy.
Yeah, that's pretty great. That's a little reminder that he likes his women strong, and I hope they have a great moment together. I'm looking forward to their their backs to each other, just laying waste to anything that's coming at them. I think that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, from the books, I shipped Jaime and Brienne pretty hard. Like, oh man, I want them to get together, but. The show really makes me want Tormund and Brienne to get together. Like, I think, like, that would be pretty cool. Like, just the two of them, like you said, just two of them versus the world.
Yeah. Maybe throw a pod in there for funsies.
Yeah, just someone's got to hold the video camera.
Sounds about right. Then we get Littlefinger being the creeper and whispering sweet nothings into Sansa's ear, and she's not having any of it for right now. To the point of Brienne asking, do we know what he wants? And she's like, oh, I know exactly what he wants.
Sansa, as much as I hate her, she did have a good line when they were parting ways, and she said something to the extent of, you can leave now, and I'll just assume that your parting quip was funny or witty or something like that. Oh, yeah. God damn it, I wrote it down somewhere. Oh, well, it doesn't matter, but it was...
Something like, you don't have to have the last word on this one, I'm just going to assume it was something witty.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Or clever, yeah.
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, no need to seize the last word, Lord Baelish. I'll assume it was something clever.
Yeah, he's a piece of work. But that's okay. We love him.
Yep.
We're lining up for mustache rides.
Mm-hmm. Who wants a mustache ride?
Okay. So now, yeah, I do. Cutting to one of the next scenes, which was probably one of the better scenes in the show. This was a good one. This was Arya sort of cruising along on her horse, and she hears some singing, and she stumbles into the lion's den. It's basically a group of Lannister soldiers hanging out in the Riverlands, just sort of enjoying a campfire, trying to stay warm, eating what little food is there, and they're relatable. They're not monsters. They're just soldiers that are homesick. They have families, and they are just normal people. And that's kind of comforting because all we see is horror in Westeros. So it was really cool just to see even the opposing side, sort of a All Quiet on the Western Front sort of moment where you get a perspective from the other side, and they're not so bad after all.
Did you ever get the feeling that they were leering at Arya, though?
Yes.
All these soldiers, and they see this young girl, and they're like, all, you know, hey, you old enough to drink, you know, feeding her the alcohol and everything. I while on one hand, I feel like, yeah, they were very relatable, relatively normal characters, I still felt like every single one of them had a villainous heart that would, like...
Sure.
Jump her, you know, the yeah. first moment they got the opportunity. So I was tense that entire time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's how Game of Thrones has, like, conditioned us. Like, the second she saw the soldiers, I'm like, oh, shit, they're going to try to rape her. Like, yep. it's instantly where my mind went, how, that's terrible.
Yeah. We haven't had a rape in 10 pages, guys.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, my God.
Clearly, these soldiers are going to try to jump her and take her, you know, whatever. And when they sat down, and they offered her food, and they were like all sweet and naive. You know, we've just been conditioned that like soldiers want to rape and murder in this land. And these were I didn't get that vibe at all. Like I got an uneasy vibe from them. Like, why is this chick just like wandering around and stuff like that? But I never got any kind of like nefarious vibe out of them. And I think that that's kind of what threw Arya off, because you could see like the camera showing like that she was looking that like the weapons were over here and like how. She was putting together in her head how she would kill them all and get away. And the fact that they weren't the monsters that she thought they would, I think she just thinks all Lannisters are monsters. I think that's what threw her off her game. And I think it was just a sweet scene to show that the Lannisters aren't all bad. Lannisters are pretty good people.
Yeah, until the first scene that they're in again, they're tying her up and trying to take advantage of her. And then they're just all going to be dead. Or we don't even see that. There's just a bunch of dead bodies around the campfire. And then I was waiting to see them all dead and her just eating the rabbit all by herself.
Yeah. Doing being the hound, basically.
Yeah. Sort of a better them than me sort of situation.
Yeah. She's got to leave someone alive to tell the tale.
Mm. Wait a minute, Mikey.
Yeah.
How did the map or the story get out? So next we have the Hound, who has grown so much as a character on the show. You know, there's only a few that have really sort of blossomed into really incredible characters. There are a lot of static ones. Hopefully most of are, you know, just kind of your regular run-of-the-mill, they are who they are type of people. And the Hound has obviously changed quite a bit from the beginning of this story. And now he revisits that cottage where he pretty much took everything that farmer and his daughter had. Now they're dead. He feels terrible about it. He has genuine remorse to the point where he even buries them. Someone that's not even remotely religious takes the time to bury these people and do what he thinks is right. I think that is a huge step to his redemption.
Yeah, and he even tries to say some religious words.
Yeah.
I can't really remember them.
He's like, fuck it.
He's like, so sorry, you're dead. You deserve better.
Yeah. And that means a lot coming from that man. And then you're reminded that he was, you know, touched by fire. And then when you're able to, when he's able to see the visions of the army and the castle, that's a spooky feeling. He definitely has a much larger part to play in the story, and that's just all the more exciting.
Yeah, I mean, aside from his you know, traitorous departure from Team Lannister. I've loved the Hound ever since. Just as like a complex character, like, you know, here's a guy whose brother like burned his face when he was a little kid, and like he's arguably the only person in the world who can stand up to his brother, who's now zombie mountain with Cersei. And I think everyone's been looking forward to the only reason that they're both still around, I have to imagine, is that they're going to come face to face, and you know they're going to have combat. And Oberyn Martell wasn't able to finish off the Mountain. It's going to take someone like Sandor Clegane to be that one to take him out. And I can't wait to see it. I was super excited to see him, that he actually had a vision in the fire. Like, it would have been easy for his character to just be like, I didn't see shit, go fuck yourself. But like, that they're making his vision an important part of the series means that they have big plans for him. And that's exciting for me, because I really like him.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Randy, any final thoughts on the Hound?
No, other than I'm excited to see where we're going with him, because he's super badass. And now knowing that he's got a larger role to play in this end game, I'm excited to see.
Cool.
Can I sidetrack our conversation for like 2 seconds?
Sure.
It'll be more than 2 seconds. You know me. So there are a couple big like prophecies in Game of Thrones, and one is called the one who was promised, and Azor Ahai or whatever, which is like who will brandish a sword called Lightbringer, which is a sword of pure fire. And those two, they may be the same person, they may not be the same person, are supposed to be the ones that are able to fight back the night, and who are the heroes that, you know, the world needs to go forward. So obviously the big theories were that Jon or Daenerys or Jaime were one of them. And I've never heard the Hound actually mentioned as being one of these like prophesized majorly important characters, because, you know, he's always been like a sideline character. Do you think that now that he's having visions, and Dondarrion had no idea why the Lord of Light kept him alive for so long, that maybe he was there to bring the Hound, and the Hound is the one that's promised? Is the Hound too insignificant a character to have such enormous weight put on him in the endgame? Or do you think it's possible now that that's what they're setting up with these visions?
I think that's definitely possible. Fire is his biggest fear, so that would be an incredible leap for him. But that's what growing's all about, right? So it's possible.
Yeah, like he's battling the Hound, it's not going well. All of a sudden he takes his sword up, catches on fire, and he becomes the Chosen One, smites the Mountain, and everyone's like, holy shit. And they won't worship him, but they'll be like, it's him! It's Neo! Yeah,
I believe.
Yeah.
Well, regardless of how big a role he plays in the endgame, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head when you said that if anybody is going to be able to take down the Mountain, it's going to be Hound, right? So, and Mountain needs to be taken down before you can get to Cersei. So it is a natural progression. You got to take out one to get to the other. So if he serves no greater purpose, it's going to be strictly to take out the Mountain.
Can't they just dangle more nuns in front of the Mountain?
Yeah. It's like, oh, nuns, my favorite. Oh, and then another quick aside. Do you guys get the impression that this is all Jaime is anymore? Or do you think that he's been training, he's still training with, you know, with Bronn and Aelyn Payne and all of these people, and at some point he's going to come out as like this just one-handed badass?
Yeah, I think that we have plenty of time to see Jaime be a badass.
Okay, I hope he does. I hope, because everyone's underestimating him, and I want to think it's just one of these things, like he's just playing it off, like, hey, if you think I'm a one-handed wuss, that's fine. Mm-hmm. One day you're going to come for me, and I'm going to cut your fucking head off.
Especially when he learned to use his hand as a weapon, too. Remember when he broke that guy's sword when he was down in Dorne?
Yeah.
That made it a little bit more exciting. When he caught the sword with his hand, it's like, oh, yeah, this doesn't hurt. You're in trouble now, buddy. He should have like a little switch on the back on his back, and when someone hits it, he can just like have hammer action with his
kung fu
with his little fist. Be like that guy Fisto in He-Man. Be amazing. Ooh.
Yeah, I hope he comes out. He has something comes out and he becomes like a badass and he just fucks shit up.
Sure.
Like, I know something you don't know. I am not left-handed.
Right.
One of those moments.
That would be great. Jorah. Jorah Mormont. He's alive. Not well, but he's alive. Sort of locked in one of those stew rooms that Tarly gets to play with.
All the people with grayscale.
Yes. So Sam's probably going to bust him out, assuming he's held against his will. I would imagine he is. And make their way to Dragonstone? Does that sound like a plan?
Yeah. I think that it's going to be a recurring thing to where Jorah's going to keep asking him, and he's going to be like, hey, she's there. I need to get to Dragonstone. He's like, hey, I know a guy.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately,
he's like, Sam's like, I'm pretty big. You guys can use me as a raft. And he just kicks his way across.
Use me as a flotation device.
Yeah. I could see it. Not really interested in Jorah anymore. I think his time has passed. I am no longer concerned with his well-being whatsoever. Same goes for Sam and Gilly and their kid. And I'm ready to move on. To which point we see Daenerys on her boat.
Well, real quick, do you think they'll ever reunite Jorah with, like, Lady Mormont, the little girl? Do you think they'll ever be a thing?
I don't know. I don't think it matters.
It definitely doesn't. I just didn't know if it ever was going to be a thing again.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
Are you done?
I was done.
Just kidding. So then we cut to Dany. She's king of the world on her little boat, and they make it to Dragonstone. And it's a long journey from start to finish. And they make their way. She doesn't say a word until she passes through the throne room into sort of the war room. And she's ready to get down to business with Tyrion. I think the time has finally come. That was pretty exciting. Nice little build-up. She had a look on her face that was a little strange, but I'll stick to it. It's fine. I'm sure I have that look on my face when I'm playing a video game or something, and I'm excited about what I'm seeing.
Sheer concentration is that look.
Not a good look for anybody, but we all have it. And I'm pretty pumped. Now, I do think that her castle is a little bit more exciting than King's Landing. I like her throne, too. Sort of that rocky dragon glass chair. And the dragon statues out front with dragons, real dragons, perched out on top is a tad bit more intimidating than King's Landing.
Yeah, I like this whole scene. Like, I loved it that they did it basically with no dialogue. I like that they let Dany have her moment. You know, Grey Worm tries to go up and Miss Andy pulls him back. And even Tyrion, who's usually like chatty Cathy, like always has something to say. Like even him, he understood the reverence of what was happening. And he kind of let her go off. And it was interesting that she didn't go right to the throne. Like she got to the throne and I figured it was going to be her sitting down and that's when the episode would end. But instead she took a left and she went into Stannis' map room. And The whole scene, the music, you know, because, you know, we've joked a million times that, like, Danny's been trying to get this fucking Westeros for, like, a million years. And she finally made it. And it was exciting.
Good stuff.
Did you guys... I rewound it a couple times, and every time it sounded like it. That scene with Cersei and Jaime in the map room, does Jaime call Westeros England?
Oh, maybe.
I swear he says it. If you have the ability to go just watch that scene, like, maybe I should turn my closed captions on, but I swear he calls it England. And it was like, it should have been a bigger deal, but like, I haven't been able to see anyone online talking about it, and so maybe I just misheard it the like two times I watched it, but yeah. Because you know, if you leave one wolf alive, the sheep will never safe.
Yeah, right, that was great. Dead.
Yeah, that was good. And then when John, I like the scene when John was talking about training the boys. He's like, not just the boys, but the girls too.
Yeah, everybody. Why divide it in half? Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, he's a good leader. It's a shame he's
leave. All they got to do is go to Dragonstone and chip away a couple of wheelbarrows worth of dragon glass from the side of the mountain.
And you know, while you're there, just stay. don't go back to Winterfell. You know, it snows year round there. Look like Dragonstone had some pretty sweet weather. They got beaches. The weather looked, it's winter and the weather looked pretty nice there. You know, just stay there. You got dragon glass and it's a nice place.
It strikes me as the San Diego of Westeros.
Yeah, let's stay there. Easily fortified. You know, got the ocean on every side. You got three dragons there just in case someone wants to fuck with you.
Yeah, unless you're a goat or a little girl, you should be fine.
But, I really liked the episode. Like I said, it was, you know, it wasn't great because not much happened. It was mostly a, hey, look, these people you liked, they're still here. I think next episode they'll hit the ground running because this is a shortened season. There'll only be 7 episodes this season. And after that, there's only 6 more episodes for Game of Thrones ever. So I think the time for setup is done. They've done it. We know who all the players are. We introduced Euron. We know his goals. We know what Jaime's and Cersei's goals are. Dany's landed. We know her goals. Got the people in the north. We know what they're up to. So now we know where everybody is, where everyone's going, what everyone wants. And now let's just fucking do this.
I want to believe that, but I feel like these next 2, maybe 3 episodes are going to be sort of they're going to drop the list of characters for each one and be a little bit more focused on a set few. And if they're not characters that we care about, they're going to be shitty episodes. I guarantee you there's going to be an episode with Gillian the Fat that is somewhere in the neighborhood of 15-20 minutes dedicated to them. And you're going to go insane.
My prediction is the next episode will have a lot of Dany, Tyrion, Varys discussing how they're going to take back the Seven Kingdoms, which I'm okay with because Tyrion and Varys are incredibly interesting characters, and I could listen to them talk for the whole episode. I think we're going to get a lot of them. We're going to get a lot of Gillian the Fat trying to plan with Mora Jorah Mormont about how to get to Dragonstone. And so I think if there is a week one, it'll be that one. I think episode 3, we get Dany and Jon meet. I think they meet episode 3, and I think it's contentious. And they spend episode 4 kind of at each other's throat. Episode 5, I think, is going to be the turning point. And then the episode after that, I think we're going to get a big battle with the White Walkers and with dragons. And maybe a dragon dies.
Oh.
I mean, I'll be sad. I don't want a dragon to die.
You.
That's my baseline reaction. The prediction.
Talking crazy.
And then I think there's going to be some big coming together moment in the 7th episode to where we're going to get a lot of leaders who wouldn't normally be together trying to figure out how to combat the White Walkers for the next season. Which I'm afraid might happen in King's Landing over the corpse of my dear departed Cersei Lannister, but I hope not. Like, I could see Jaime, Tyrion, and Jon Snow kind of uniting everybody, like all like the leaders, and having like some, you know, kind of get together, like, what are we going to do under Queen Daenerys? Don't you know I'm loco?
I do. Well, all right. Is that it?
It is. What did you think? What were your overall thoughts of the episode, Justin? Did you like it? Was it just okay? Were you kind of disappointed that with only 13 episodes of Game of Thrones left, they chose to do a kind of like a clip show?
I wouldn't say disappointed. I enjoyed the episode. I thought there were a lot of good moments, most of which would probably be with Arya and the Jon and Sansa scenes. And ultimately the Hound. I thought those were all very good takeaways. And I'd probably give the episode a B. Maybe a B minus. But I think it was a good start. Last season we didn't really have a moment to breathe. And this season it's good to just sort of get us sort of back into the flow of things. And then release the Hounds and take off.
Yeah, I agree with you. What about you, Randy? What are your thoughts? Were you disappointed? Do you think this was just kind of, we needed this episode just to get all the pieces in place?
I don't, on one hand, I don't really consider it just a kind of a clip show, like you were saying. You know, there were some substantial scenes in here, and I think it started strong. We were all praising how well that opening scene played out. I think with all the heavy shit that's about to come, we needed to start at a kind of a slow pace and build up to it. You know, are you familiar with the concept of edging?
Strike. Yeah, every morning.
Strike that from the record.
It makes it feel so good when you finally do.
Yeah, but what it is, I don't think they want to come out of the gate too strong, because then when there is the inevitable lull or slowdown, you know, it's going to really feel like you're losing momentum, and it's going to take the wind out of your sails. So I think by kind of starting slow and building up to that point, it's going to feel a little bit more satisfactory to all parties involved.
Yeah, Weiss and Benioff, the producers, they after the episode, they have like a little interview type thing, and they had said that originally the Arya scene was not the beginning, like it just happened in the middle of the episode, because they don't typically do cold openings for the episode. They usually start with previously on, and then and then they go into the show. Mm-hmm. To where I think the original plan was for the Arya thing to be a big, oh my god, like a halfway point in the show. To where I think it's probably the strongest scene of the nights. But I don't know if, because it started off with such a bang, if it set like an expectation that like shit was about to happen.
I want to add on that whole scene too. It's lame that they went through all the trouble to show us how the many-faced god process works, and when someone dies, they clean them off and take the skin off and put it in this room. I don't see how Arya, with the tools that she had, was able to do what she did with Walder Frey's face. Just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
Fake. It's fake.
It's a World of Dragons. I'm like, yeah, I'm not a big fan of the many-faced god thing, but yeah. There's a little Mission Impossible 2 for me.
Yeah.
Just tearing off the masks.
Totally.
Where's the rabbit's foot?
Yeah. Well, we chatted a long time about Game of Thrones, and we originally were going to talk about D23 too. Do you think we have time to, or you just want to make this a Game of Thrones show?
I'm cool either way.
I think there's no better time than the present to talk about D23, considering it just wrapped up. And you were there.
Well, we can chat about it. Yeah. I think it was a little more subdued than most people thought. I don't know if it was the Han Solo upheaval, but Star Wars was pretty muted there. We got the behind-the-scenes thing, which everyone can see online. It's great to, you know, I actually almost prefer this over a trailer, just because we know we're going to get a trailer, so this is kind of like extra. And, you know, it's good to see all the practical effects, and it's good to see, a film nerd like me like to see, like, the production of big film and stuff like that. So, did you guys see the behind-the-scenes reel?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, I wouldn't say there's any, like, huge highlights, but it kind of sets... What I'm most intrigued about with a lot of the behind-the-scenes pictures that Rian Johnson took and all this behind-the-scenes stuff is there seems to be a genuine love and, like, admiration between Rian Johnson, the director, and the actors. And to me, that almost screams, like that he is... The character is important to him. Like, J.J. Abrams, we saw him a lot of on the computer and looking at these scenes, and, like, we didn't see him really interacting with his actors. It was a lot of, like, action, and that's great, and this and that. But Rian Johnson, we're seeing him walk in the hallways with Carrie Fisher, and we see him having a heated debate with Mark Hamill, and I'm just really optimistic. And the fact that we haven't really heard a lot of problems coming out of Last Jedi, you know, like, we heard problems coming out of Force Awakens, obviously. Rogue One was famous for its reshoots, and Han Solo appears to be going down that road as well. But The Last Jedi has been this film that we really haven't heard anything negative about. It's the only Star Wars film in this new Disney era. It only has one writer. Rian Johnson is the only writer on this film. There's no Lawrence Kasdan, no Jake Kasdan. He is the writer. He is the director. They've never tried to dispose him or anything like they did with Lord Miller and Gareth Edwards. And I'm just real excited. It seems that this movie is just... It's wholly Rian Johnson's film, and it seems to be going smoothly, and I feel like I've talked a long time, so...
I feel like everyone's just sort of holding their breath. We don't know what to expect after the death of Carrie Fisher, and I think that deep down, we feel like it's maybe wrong to talk about it. I mean, we can predict, but we can't say. I think it's just sort of you got to be delicate with this one, at least until it comes out. But in the meantime, we still ultimately don't really know what it's about, and we haven't been given enough information to go forward with it. And I think we're all just sort of waiting to see it before the hammer drops.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Randy, what about Mark Hamill and Daisy Ridley of the last couple of weeks have been doing a lot of interviews, and one of the recurring themes that's coming out of it seems to be they were both surprised at the direction that they took, Rey and Luke, but that this movie it's a wholly unique take, but wholly satisfying. Are you mostly excited about that, or is there a large part of your Spidey senses that are tingling like, they're going to do some fucking weird?
I know all the hairs on the back of my neck are standing up just thinking about what they're going to be doing to our beloved Luke Skywalker that we grew up with. And I think that's going through a lot of people's heads right now, ever since Mark Hamill made that comment a couple months back saying that he wholeheartedly disagreed with all the choices that Rian Johnson was making for the Luke Skywalker character. He was fundamentally against all that. But at the same time, he then went on in a different interview to kind of backtrack and say, but it works. And if the man who brought the character to life, you know, from the page, from the beginning, is on board with the direction that they're taking this character, then I don't know. Then I guess it's certainly worth being open-minded enough to not cast any kind of judgment before seeing it, you know. And Rian Johnson is a pretty talented director, and how rare is it in a big studio picture environment that you get to be the writer and director of a giant, multiple hundred million dollar picture like Star Wars? You know, it's like, normally there's a lot more gates to kind of go through to get your vision on screen, but being writer director, he really does. He gets to approach it from an auteur point of view, which is something that doesn't happen in studio films. So what you're going to see is a unique and unified vision, primarily from one mind. And regardless of the direction that it ends up taking, at least it's not going to be, unless the studio gets involved or other forces get involved in post-production, what you're going to see is a very unified story, and it's not going to feel like it's all over the place like Rogue One was. As much as we love Rogue One, there's definitely, it feels like it might go down one road before making a hard right and going down a different road. And that's just because of all those reshoots that happened, and because so many people put their hand in the pie to kind of put their own stink on it. And it worked for that one, but this is going to be wholly different.
Yeah. 5 months away.
Yeah.
5 months away. And plus, the trailer ends in the greatest way possible, General Akbar letting us know that it's a wrap.
Of course, I knew you were going to love that.
Come on, how can that be the best thing ever? So, yeah, so that was probably the highlight of Star Wars at D23. They had these new character posters, but Disney needs to fucking fire whoever makes their posters, like the Marvel posters, and I don't know. I'm just not buying.
Are you over the red theme? Everybody was talking about the red logo for The Last Jedi, and now everything is tinted red in all those posters.
I don't know. I could make these posters. And if I can make these posters, they're not good. I mean, that's right. My philosophy. Like, I can't make a Drew Struzan poster. Like, I physically could not, even if I tried for 100 years. And so I'm not saying that's the only reason they're good, but, like, there's... I don't know. It reminded me of the Force Awakens ones where it was like the side of their face and they had like a Leia, and they're just okay. I guess they're not bad. They're just,
it's like you see them awkwardly from the nose down, to the hips or something like that. It's weird.
Yeah. I don't know. And Kylo Ren's in red, you know, so it kind of looks weird.
Everybody's in red. It's very weird.
Yeah. So I don't know, but I guess what most people are disappointed about is, I think, with all the recent upheaval with the Han Solo movie, I think they thought they were going to maybe, not damage control, but just kind of show something to show, like, hey, don't worry, this movie's not fucked. This movie's still going to be great.
Just something to acknowledge that that movie exists.
Yeah, I mean, bring Donald Glover out, you know? I mean, show us the first footage of Aiden Reich as Han Solo. I mean, just show us something. It maybe doesn't even have dialogue. Just have a scissor reel where he's charting a navigation. Him and Chewie are running through, shooting up bad guys. Freaking Lando's behind him, just looking all badass with his cape. You know, just give us something. Ron Howard can come out and say, hey, guys, you remember me? I was in Happy Days. I was Opie.
Did you guys see the leaked set photos from Han Solo?
Yeah.
That hit last week online. Looks like they're coming up some sort of, like, elevator. You got Han and Chewie and whatever character Woody Harrelson's playing.
Thank you very much, Randy, for reminding me of that, because I wanted to float something by you guys.
All right.
So in those photos, you can clearly see the Holy Grail from Indiana Jones. Like, it's one, like, they're in, like, some, like, collectors. Like, someone is collecting art or artifacts, something like that. And
yeah, there is, like, some sort of collection room. Yeah.
Right, and the Holy Grail is clearly there.
Yeah.
And at San Diego Comic-Con, there's going to be a figure, an exclusive figure of Grand Admiral Thrawn being sold, and he comes with a very random accessory. He comes with the Grail Cup from the Holy Grail. Is it possible that Han Solo and Lando and them are going to Grand Admiral Thrawn's place? This seems really random to be a coincidence that this random non-Star Wars artifact is showing up simultaneously in two places.
Yeah, in animated form, well, theoretically, in toy form and then in movie form. Because I guess we never really saw the Grail in Rebels, but I'd have to go back and look. Who knows, maybe it's an Easter egg in his office somewhere.
But the toy clearly comes with it.
Clearly. No, you're right. And I did not put those pieces together at all, but holy hell. Now that's all I can think about.
I want this, Randy. I want this.
All right, so what day are we going to wait in line to get the ticket to wait in line at the Hasbro booth?
I don't know. Probably Friday. We're pretty light Friday. Or maybe if we get down on Wednesday, we probably get down on time, but yeah. Or maybe Thursday. Who knows? One of these days. Doesn't matter. One of the days we'll wait in line for it, but yeah, it was just a crazy theory. I want to flat. Sorry, I know I'm tangent king today, but Justin.
Yes.
Have you heard about this Avengers trailer, sizzle reel they showed, and does it fill you with warm, gooey feelings that Thanos is going to just wreck shit?
Yeah, he's
going
to beat the shit out of everybody. Yeah, that does make me excited. And I like how there was a Guardians reveal where Star-Lord and Iron Man and fucking Doctor Strange are all fighting with Thanos, and it's just not enough. I think that's fantastic.
The great opening to the trailer is the Guardians driving through space, and they basically crash into Thor. And Thor's like a splayed on the windshield.
Yeah. That's
So I guess that's how Thor gets back to Earth.
Yeah, just hitching a ride, bug style. And did you happen to notice that Josh Brolin is like fucking the size of the Hulk now?
He's big.
He's ripped. And that's probably for his role as Cable in Deadpool 2.
Yeah.
But he's still looking good. Like, yeah. Cue the Subway sandwich music.
Yeah, he is definitely, he's definitely Triple H this bitch, man.
Yeah. Good Lord.
Did you see the gauntlet that they had on display at D23?
Yeah.
Oh my god, it looks so rad.
It's happening.
Looked huge, too.
It did. It looked like a monstrous thing, and yeah, it was great.
I hope it has Vision guts all over it.
Just bits.
We were just talking about that. I think that would be great.
And then they brought a ton of the cast out. They had, I think it was like 14 people on stage at once from the movie. So, yeah, it's they definitely made a bigger splash than I think most people thought they would. And they definitely, I'd say, eclipsed Star Wars as far as, like, just the hype.
Mm-hmm. It's a big deal, and everyone's excited. As long as it doesn't suck.
Yeah. Which, I mean, how can it really?
I know, and everyone's gonna be pumped. You got We're coming off the heels of Spider-Man. We're going to have a Thor movie. We're going to have a Black Panther movie. Then we're going to have Avengers. And I think the world's just going to just explode. That's your moneymaker right there. Everyone's going to be so amped for this movie. And it's just going to make it rain.
Okay, well, let's play a little fun box office from a year later, a year from now. Do you think Avengers Infinity War makes more than The Force Awakens?
I do. Oh, The Force Awakens? No. Yeah. I think it'll make more than The Last Jedi.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking interesting, man.
I think that the thing with Force Awakens is it benefited the same way that Episode 1 did, in that time has passed. We're ready for more Star Wars, and bam, we got it. And I think that people were going to go see Force Awakens whether they wanted to or not. And now with Last Jedi, they're going to say, well, Force Awakens wasn't all that great. I'll just Redbox this shit. I honestly believe that. I think that Infinity War is going to just explode.
Well, keeping in mind, Infinity War is going to come out in a crowded summer to where it might not be able to have the legs, and it comes out within a month of the as of right now, it comes out within a month of the Han Solo movie. You know, that may change with all the behind-the-scenes drama, to where Last Jedi's got all of December and, like, the first 3 weeks of January, like, pretty much all to itself. So it'll be interesting. I think they'll be close, and I would not be surprised if Infinity War made more, but I see Infinity War making just a metric shit ton of money, just because it's, you know, with other Avenger movies, other Conker movies, like, there's maybe not someone you like Black Panther. You know, if you're not a Black Panther fan, you're not going to see Black Panther.
I wasn't a Doctor Strange fan, but I went and saw that because I didn't want to miss anything. It's all one giant connected universe, and I felt like I would be doing myself a disservice by not watching it. Yeah. Whereas I think that Avengers Infinity War is going to be one of the biggest movies of all time, box office-wise.
Yeah, I agree with that. What do you say, Randy? You think so, too?
Yeah, I think it's going to be huge. I don't think it's going to be Force Awakens big, but I think it's going to be damn close. Yeah.
But you hate Marvel, so...
Oh, really?
I don't hate it. I just don't like it as much as Star Wars. I love it slightly less than Star Wars.
Yeah,
I still love it.
And I think it'll make less than Force Awakens, but more than Last Jedi.
Yeah, I can see that. I guess there were a couple other small stories from around the. Well, I guess staying with D23. Did you guys see the model for Star Wars Land?
Yeah.
Or Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, or Edge of the Galaxy, whatever they're going to call it. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah, it looks very cool. Did you get to see it in person, or was it
too crowded? No, I will spray long story, but yes, I did see it, and it was enormous. It was not a small setup. It was probably like 20 feet long. Like, it was a big thing, and someone had put a composite together to where, like, they showed what they showed at D23, and they showed, like, what it really would look like, and they just put, like, 7 trillion little people in it, so you couldn't even move.
I saw that, yeah.
But they also had the actual, like, transport vehicle that the First Order ride is going to be, and it was a very interesting, like, there's a ride in Universal Florida, that is, it's the Spider-Man ride, and it's, like, this, like, 4D experience, but it's, like, a ride. And it looked a lot like that, and the way they were talking about it, it's going to be a pretty cool ride. And but what I thought Randy would be more excited about, it's the 50th anniversary of Pirates of the Caribbean, and so they had kind of like this like Pirates of the Caribbean like museum, and so they had all this like old stuff like from the ride and from the movies, and it was really really cool. And I wish I had my DSLR to take better pictures. I took some on my phone, but you know, they don't do it justice, and they were really putting a lot of effort there, and they actually sold these really cool posters because it was the 50th anniversary of Pirates, the 40th anniversary of Space Mountain, and then like 30th anniversary of Star Tours. And the Space Mountain ones, like, it was like this really cool like retro like 70s poster about like going to the moon type thing.
That's cool.
But but yeah, and then they announced they were gonna put a Tron ride in Universal Walt Disney World.
I heard, yeah, the Magic Kingdom.
Yeah.
I'm like, damn it. Well, at least it's in the States. I have an actual chance of going on that one, unlike Shanghai, which I'm probably never going to go to.
Yeah. But, they also announced it was kind of interesting that I don't know if it's the California park is ahead of schedule or the Florida park's behind schedule, but the Star Wars Land in Anaheim will open first before Florida. So
that's cool. I think they started building the Anaheim one first.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, they'll open within not too long of each other, but
yeah,
they're both still on schedule for their 2019 openings.
Now, do you know which theme park in Florida it's going to be part of? Is it Hollywood Studios?
Yeah, it's Hollywood Studios.
Okay.
So that's the one that has Star Tours, right?
Yeah, it's the one that has Star Tours, and they already have an AT-AT and an Ewok village and shit over there. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it was pretty fun. Pretty fun. Did you guys see any movies this weekend? Did you guys see Planet of the Apes?
No.
I did not.
In the woods.
Oh, good. Maybe we'll all see you together at Comic-Con, then.
We can. I'm so worried that Caesar's not going to make it to the end of this movie.
It's supposed to be incredible. Like, it's the best of them.
It looks like a giant snuff film, Dave, and I'm going to just see a bunch of monkeys die, and I'm going to be sad.
Yeah, it's being touted as not a happy movie. Like, it's an incredible movie, but not a happy movie.
It's like Project X Part 2.
Oh, man.
Yeah, well, even that scene in the trailer when, like, Caesar's, like, on his knees and Woody Harrelson's got, like, cocking the gun, like, he's going to execute him. I'm like, I hope something happens. Someone should save that monkey.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, so I don't know. It doesn't look good for those apes. But Matthew Reeve says he wants to make a sequel to it.
Oh.
I thought this was kind of, like, the end, but I don't know if he wants to follow a different character or do something different, but he's come out and said that he has an idea for another Apes movie, and he would like to make it.
Oh. Is it going to be apes against humans?
This time it's humans versus apes.
Oh, okay.
Flipping the script.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
But I guess this one, you know, because in the other Planet of the Apes movies, they were good humans and bad humans. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess this one is just bad human. Like,
this one,
humans
looks like
are the bad guys.
There's apes that join them, though. There's like one ape that's like loading up the gun. And if you look at the poster, there are apes with their fucking guns pointed right at the other apes. It looks sad.
Traitors.
Sorry, I got distracted by ice cream.
It's all right. They need that one stormtrooper to call him a traitor.
Yeah.
Traitor!
Sad.
But speaking of Matthew Reeves, you see he was going to shit-can Ben Affleck's The Batman script?
Yeah! He's like, Argo, fuck this. Yourself.
Oh, man.
it was interesting because when Matt Reeves was originally approached to direct it, remember it all fell through, I wonder if originally when he started negotiations, they told him he had to make Affleck's script, and he's decided that was the deal-breaker. He wanted to make his own script. And later on, when he actually signed on, they allowed him to do it. And so it's interesting. I wonder if that's happened. I wonder what that means about Deathstroke, because Deathstroke was the villain, and he's going to be in Justice League as like a cameo. Mm-hmm. I guess if his cameo gets excised out of Justice League, we know that he won't be the villain of Batman, probably.
Well, I think that there's still room for it. Because I know he wants to do sort of like a... Like a, at least the word on the street is that he wants to do sort of a detective noir kind of film.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but it would be better if we didn't know who Deathstroke was. If we already know that he's a character in Justice League, then it seems silly, because then Batman would be like, oh, this looks like the worst of Deathstroke. Ah, we gotta go get him. You know what I mean? As opposed to not knowing what this guy is all about and having
to detect. He has to figure it out.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm also unfamiliar with where in the time. I mean, I guess this would fall in the current continuity of, you know, Justice League and Batman v Superman, but I guess is Batman going back to crime fighting full time, or do you think this will take place before those events?
I don't know. So confused. It would be. DC's always sort of had a weird, fucked up timeline in the grand scheme of things, even with the comic books. You know, their continuity changes. Some stuff stays and other stuff goes away. They are notorious for just sort of rewriting the rules as they go. So
just figure it out.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they did make it sort of an origin, not necessarily an origin tale, but like in the early days. But at the same time, it would make way more sense if they just had it go right now. We don't need to fuck with the time space continuum any further.
Y'all can't fuck with the police.
Just make it happen.
Yeah,
it would be so much better that way. Just it takes place today.
At these crazy timelines, everything's crisscrossing. Dogs and cats living together. Yeah. Doctor Who's a chick, Randy. What? Girls can't be doctors, right?
Well, that certainly seems to be what a lot of the internet is spewing today since that announcement was made this morning. Man, I you don't see people as often divided so starkly against each other as they are when you change the sex of everybody's favorite Time Lord. But apparently that's what happened today. I'm completely cool with it. I mean, and this is going to sound like really terrible, but I think they were destined to go one way or the other with the casting. It was either going to be a woman or it was going to be a minority, I think. It wasn't going to be your standard white male, which is pretty much what it has been for hell since the beginning, pretty much. So the direction they ended up going was a decidedly more female route. And I think they tested the water. I don't know, David, I know you don't watch the show. Justin, do you dabble at all in Doctor Who?
Doctor Who? More like Nurse Who, am I right? Kidding. I haven't watched it since Capaldi became the Doctor. Not because I'm anti-Capaldi. It was I cut the cord on my cable and went a different route as far as when and where I was going to catch up on Doctor Who.
That's okay. I don't blame you. I was kind of lukewarm on Capaldi at the beginning, but he really grew on me, and I really like his portrayal as the Doctor, which is why I'm sad to see him go. We still get him for one more episode, where the Christmas episode, which is where he's going to finally eventually die and do his official regeneration. But it's really cool. I'll sidetrack this for just a moment, but since we were just talking about Walder Frey, I can't think of the actor's name, played Filch in Harry Potter. He's actually in the Doctor Who Christmas special this year. He plays the original Doctor, the first Doctor, who's this white-haired old man, and he looks very similar to the original actor that played him, like way back in the 60s. So it's kind of interesting to see how they're going to be coming together, but that's a complete aside. What I was getting at is they tested the waters with the idea of a male Time Lord regenerating into a female by having the character of the Master in this season. And he ends up kind of conspiring with a future version of himself, because he is also a Time Lord. And when he dies, he comes back as a woman. And we know these two characters independently from one another. And to know that they end up being the same character, just in a different part of their timeline, we know that, or we get adjusted to the idea that a male can regenerate into a female. So I think that was preparing the audience for the inevitable female 13th Doctor. So anyway, those who consider themselves in the know saw it coming, but I think it's cool.
Yeah, it's fantastic. David Bradley is the actor you were thinking of, by the way. But no, I think it's overdue, and I'm excited. And it's going to bring a lot. I saw in comments, just kind of sort of looking at the forums to see what kind of fire we were dealing with, there were a lot of people that were saying, I haven't watched it since Tennant, or I haven't watched it since Matt Smith, and now I'm interested to get back into the series. So that will bring back audiences and, of course, garner new ones. So it's exciting. Big step.
Yeah, for sure.
I like it.
I like
all
you.
Of it. I like you, too.
What I got to get to put it in you.
That's right. Well, that's all I got. You guys got anything else? Anything cool?
I'm excited for Comic-Con. and I get to see you in just 3 short days, and we're going to play Dungeons and Dragons together for the first time. We are going to go to a whole new level of geekiness, and I cannot wait. We have been talking about doing something like this since, I think, the day I met you, Dave, and I am really excited that this is finally happening.
It's happening. It's happening.
Yeah. eye contact is consent. This is going down.
Yeah, there will be plenty of tweets and all that nonsense coming to Comic-Con from us as we report on all the comings and goings, but should be good 5 days. Oh, or 4 days.
That's so many days with you guys.
I know, you're stuck.
This is actually going to be my shortest Comic-Con trip ever. Typically, I come down on Tuesday or Wednesday, and I don't leave till Monday. This time, I'm flying directly to San Diego Wednesday night and leaving Sunday afternoon.
You're like, I just want to get this over with. Get in, get out, surgical strike.
It's so old.
Let's be done with this.
I just want my own bed. I hate having my bed.
Just bring it with you. Just roll it up.
Oh, it's too heavy.
Shrink it. You don't got a shrink ray?
No, I don't.
Idiot.
I am one of those.
Well, cool. What about you, Randy? Anything else?
You've got done. Nothing.
Spent your load. Well, cool. Well, thanks for joining us for another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. As always, make sure you like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at Geek Legacy, and keep up with us for all your Comic-Con geek news and reviews. I'll talk to you guys later.